Congratulations!
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the base number one arts and culture podcast, with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz. This week is such a big week. There's some huge news hitting the press.
Oh my God.
Hitting the wires. I bet you there's going to be like an SF Chronicle article. There's going to be like KQED article.
Oh my God. With some pictures.
Smiling
pictures.
That's probably going to be an art practical.
Who's it going to be of?
The new executive director of Southern Exposure,
Patricia Maloney.
I think she only got this job as some kind of con game to get on our show.
Patricia, you don't need to con us to get on the show. Come on now.
Literally, anyone can get on the show. Just call in. 419-351-6606.
Anyhow, this is amazing new news.
Uh-huh.
It's different than what I was expecting. I can say that much. I really had my feelers, you know, thinking about
you
who...
You were... I mean...
I really thought it was going to be someone who, like... Maybe went to school out in the Bay Area, left for a good chunk of years, did amazing shit in New York and around the country, or maybe even internationally, but then wanted to come back to the Bay Area and had a clear understanding. I just had this whole idea about who the person was going to be.
Maysoon was sleeping outside of Southern Exposure every night, skulking the hallways every day.
Yep. I was sort of, you know, hanging out in the bathroom extra long to try to eavesdrop on the meetings in the gallery.
Drilling holes in the walls.
Yep. I tried to hack into, you know, the
mainframe. You got Apple.
Tried to hack into, got Apple to hack into Val's phones.
Yep. So, point is, Maymay.
So, what does that mean for art practical?
Yeah, that's a great question.
So, for those of you, everyone knows who Patricia Maloney is, right?
Art practical staff somehow. I think I accidentally have been included in their mailing list.
What does that mean?
I got an email today about that.
It?
Yep. Only to people that are on the
So how do they frame it or phrase it?
Oh, it was just a lovely heartfelt saying, like, you know,
it was from Patricia
saying that she has the confidence to move on into this new job because all the people at Art Practical believed in her for so long, and
yeah,
it was just a very touching, like, goodbye.
Yeah I'm sure she's psyched. I can't wait.
Well, what's gonna happen?
I don't know. There's already a writing residency at SOEX, so she can't start that.
That's awesome.
It's already going on.
It's already started.
What is she going to do? What's her vision going to be?
Well, should I be the director of Art Practical now?
I think so.
I don't have time for that shit. Can I kind of just phone it in?
I don't think so. Uh-huh. So do you know anything about who's taking her place?
I don't know anything about it, but I know that Lee... who has been the interim director at SOEX is going back to her full-blown job over at the ODC. What if this is like the first episode that somebody from outside the Bay Area is listening to of this podcast?
Hey, welcome.
Should we give more background?
You want it about us or
so
about what
Southern
we're talking
about? Southern Exposure is an arts nonprofit in the Mission District of San Francisco, California. It's an art place, and they had a different... director, and then she left.
That director was there for maybe
many years.
13 to 15 years.
Fink. Now they got a new director who was the editor-in-chief. Is that right? King?
She was the kingpin.
of
Art Practical,
which is an online art publication. Yeah. We're really laying it out here, Maymay.
We never ever lay it out.
We really don't. I thought our last episode was a little bit too inside baseball.
It was pretty loose, that one.
Art is a form of expression that takes a lot of visual parts.
How about sound?
Sound.
It's not visual.
No, I hate sound, but that's fine. That's part of it.
How about photography?
Yep.
Is that included?
That's part of art.
Okay, good.
And then art
nonprofit
organizations have programming such as exhibitions, classes, events,
fundraisers,
performances, and so on. And that's what an arts nonprofit is. Okay, I think we filled them in 100%.
I think we should stop there. Most definitely.
Did you want to add anything?
I think you did pretty good.
I know there were some great people up for this job, so
yeah.
It's a heavy,
someone I know closely, actually.
Heavy responsibility.
all eyes will be on her for
all
sure.
Eyes.
I think that's the only, I mean, I think if you came in from out of town, all eyes would be on you, but you wouldn't necessarily know, you know, but being already so entrenched in Bay Area arts, the art scene or arts and culture, and then moving into this, I feel like this is a pretty high profile position for all of us out here.
Oh, big time.
Just she knows everyone is going to be watching her every move and potentially being very critical of every move. It's going to be intense.
Wow.
This Sorry, is Patricia, stressful not to, I don't want to stress you out. I am not going to be that person. I mean, I'll be interested to see what happens.
Maisoon will definitely be that person.
I will not.
Anyhow,
I just
good luck
I'm,
to you, Patricia Maloney. I know you've already done some good time at Southern
she's gonna
Exposure.
Kill it.
She understands the program.
I think it'll be exciting.
She's going to give some great speeches.
Oh yeah, she's such a killer
fantastic
writer.
Orator.
I've gone to her.
This is coming out on Wednesday, so already I'm sure when this is out, the fucking all the internet outlets are going to be rife with commentary. Anyhow, we got a great interview for you this week. This was a great one. I do have to say before we air this that
nightmare.
I did not record the first 5.5 hours.
It was probably about 20 to 30 minutes.
I didn't.
Of an
I forgot
interview.
How to you. We're
God
using our
it.
New equipment. Keep in mind, listener. So it's going to start a little abruptly because we're picking back up where we left off from not recording. My apologies, but to be fair, there's a tight learning curve on this and all this new. There's a lot of blinking lights. We're here in San Francisco talking to Rodney Ewing, and we're getting right back into it. Sure enough, new recorder, Kate's fucking everything up, and question from Maisoon.
Right.
Artist, educator, comic book nerd.
Yes. The Startup Art Fair began last year in San Francisco, and you participated. You had a room. We visited you there. And then they also had another fair 2016 this year in LA, which you also went to. And so the project you brought to that, to the LA fair was, I thought was an interesting project and something, a story I had never heard of and wanted you to talk about that. It was called Henry Box Brown.
That stemmed from just an interest in Henry Box Brown. Because when it seems like, especially when I was younger, when people would tell the story of Henry Box Brown or they find out the story, they would always be like this underlying giggle, which used to just piss me off because I'm like, really? This guy...
It is not funny.
This guy's life was so bad. I mean, slavery was such a despicable institution that, you know, him spending time in a box, in a wooden box to get away was his only solution. So I really wanted to make a piece about that. And I started thinking about that a couple of years ago. I found these cardboard prefab boxes on the street. And I knew I was going to like, okay, that's going to be the structure for Henry. I didn't know how I was going to do it. I didn't know if I was going to print something separately and then wrap it around the box with, you know. But as I started working on it, another project came up where I used his image on an office door on glass. And I was thinking, okay, I can still use his image again. So I knew, okay, now I had the box. I had his image that I can still screen on there. But I was worried. I was thinking about the contents, like what should the contents be? And I was thinking about all the things he could have used at the time. I was like, what if it's a modern day Henry Box Brown? What would he have with him? And none of those things really seemed, I mean, they were okay ideas, but none of them really seemed poignant. So I was talking to a coworker of mine, a friend of mine. We have an eighth grade advisory together, and she's a math teacher. And I was mentioning it to some of my students what I was working on. She goes, oh, I teach a Henry Box Brown activity. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, we do a math problem based around Henry Box Brown. And they talk about, you know, the area of the box, you know, the interior shape, the exterior shape. So they're doing all these math problems around it. But they also teach about his travel. And I thought that was a really interesting idea. And I asked her, could I borrow her lesson plan? And when she gave me a lesson plan, you know, I didn't think her lesson plan was incomplete, but I thought, oh, what can I add to this? So I start, adding all these questions about, basically, what kind of state of mind, or what kind of nation would you have to be living in to like put yourself in a box to escape? You know, what are your circumstances? And I just start going through and asking all these really emotional questions. And at one point she asked me like, oh, did you think I left something out? Do you think I'm not teaching? I'm like, no. This is just basically from my point of view and to go along with, with these really complicated but personal math problems.
Mm-hmm. So that's an incredible
assignment.
The final
project was a sculpture or an object?
It's an object. And which I'm holding here in my hand. And I call it left-handed magic because, as it turns out, that Henry, at one point when he left the United States, he supported himself by sort of performing magic acts and based around his escape. So you have Henry's face on the front, but when you open it up, it's a slate board with all the type questions. So, for example, it starts off with just describing who Henry is. Henry Box Brown was an enslaved man who shipped himself to freedom in a wooden box. If you had to sit in a box for 27 hours, what position would you want to sit in? Draw a picture. That's from the math problem. And underneath that, A, how desperate do your circumstances have to be to place yourself in a box? B, what are you trying to escape and what do you hope to find upon your arrival? C, how do you maintain your freedom? Then one of the second questions is, imagine a rectangular prism that would fit around you in that position. What are the dimensions of the rectangular prism? Draw the sketch. What is the surface area? What is the volume? What is the cost of living? Henry Brown was 5'8", 200 pounds. Make an educated guess about the dimensions of the rectangular prism he used to ship himself to freedom. Explain what you took into consideration to make this guess. Question five, Henry Brown had a wife and two children sold away from him. Estimate the quantity of his grief and his loss.
What was the reception like?
Yeah.
Because that is to me so different than the kind of work you usually see at like an art fair.
Mm-hmm.
Especially what you might imagine at an LA art fair, which is maybe not fair to say, but is real.
And we like to talk a lot of shit about LA.
I think, it varies. I find it always varies with my work. People like will walk up to it and look at it, and I was apologizing at the first San Francisco startup fair because people walk into the room, I'm explaining to them like the stuff I had on the wall, and they'd be like, oh.
That's what they would say. That was their reaction?
Yeah, and it wasn't like a bad thing. It was just like, I feel like I'm sorry. I'm like, I'm depressing you guys. But people are like, no. We really want to hear about this. We really want to, this is,
it's heavy.
Yeah.
Right?
And I felt like I probably got some of that at LA. Some people would look at it and sort of just pass it by. Some people would be more engaged in it. And it just, I don't think it's, I don't take anything like that personally because some people are going to be drawn, engaged more. Some other pieces of work than they are going to be to others, and that's just fine.
You were selling these, right? Did you make some sales?
No, I didn't sell any of the boxes yet. I sold some other prints that I had there. I had limited edition prints of silk screens of the piece, the Days and Occasion piece that's on my wall behind you guys. And so I made smaller editions of that. I made smaller pieces of those. The LA Art Fair, first of all, I got to say that Ray and Steve are just like the greatest guys for starting this fair. They're extremely easy to work with. They really focus on the artist's needs. They really make you feel like that you're driving this train.
That's Ray Beldner and Steve Zavatero.
Yes, indeed. And going down to LA, there are a couple of things I wanted to accomplish. I had never shown my work in LA before. And there's some contacts I wanted to make when I was down there. And I did that. And I think there's probably more to come. Somebody just asked me to be in at a group show. Another one of the artists that was there, he's also a curator, asked me to be in a group show in New York. And had a couple other offers to be in group shows while I was down there. So.
Badass.
I mean, I think awesome. I think everybody sort of were presented with all these opportunities while they were there, and I think everybody sort of just took advantage of them.
In LA, it was a mixed group of artists, right? It was San Francisco, and was it all? What's the rule? Is it all California artists? Like, how did they?
They had people as far away as Maine who came out.
So it's the whole country, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Anybody can apply.
So I'm always curious to know, like, how it was different, like how LA was different than San Francisco, the art fairs, and I'm just always curious to know how our cities are different.
I think it's more the art fair that made the difference, and rather than the cities. It's from the reports I kept hearing from people who were coming to the startup fair in LA, is because during that weekend there was Fabrics, there was the LA Contemporary, and there was the LA Art Fair. So
there's just a lot going on.
Yeah, they had those three things going on, and proximity wise everybody was kind of sort of stretched all over the place. You know, one's out in Santa Monica, we're in Hollywood. I'm not sure where Fabrics was. But when people were coming in, they were saying how refreshing it was, because they could actually walk up and talk to the artists. That you can sort of walk around this,
as opposed to a gallerist.
Yeah. You can sort of walk around at your own pace and see the work. You could take a break or sit down by the pool. You could, you know, it was more intimate, but leisurely is not the right word, because people there are serious. They were really looking at the work, and people were looking at work and coming to your room, that maybe coming back again or bringing friends back. Or yeah, I would do it again in LA. Mm-hmm. If I go
to an art fair, I'm definitely probably not the person who's buying anything. I'm going to still look at work.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering if in LA, if the people that were there were really kind of on the, were they collectors, or were they, was it kind of everyone?
Yeah, I think it was a really nice mix. I heard that, you know, some people, you know, made their money back from just by sales.
That's awesome.
Other people, you know, they met gallerists. I met a really great gallerist that I had planned on meeting. I actually wrote her a card, sent it snail mail, and she actually showed up. I mean, she walked through my door and said, "Hey, are you Rodney?" I'm like, "Yeah." And I was just sort of, I was
so cool.
I was stunned for like 30 seconds. Like, she's,
you're like, "You actually showed up."
Yeah. But yeah, I think it was a good mix of gallerists who were coming by, collectors coming by, and curators coming by, and a general public coming by.
Yeah.
What'd you say in that card?
What did I say? You know, I actually got this idea from a friend of mine, Victoria, and she said that she was asking me like strategies that I would do for the startup fair, because this is her first startup fair. And as we were talking, she goes, "Yeah, I sent, you know," she said stuff to like LACMA and like sent them little notes. And like, "You think a handwritten note really works?" I said, "Yeah, they get email all the time. Like, so just send a really nice handwritten note." So I just basically said, you know, who I was. I made some postcards. I sent my postcard and a business card. And I just said, I have some VIP tickets if you want to use them. Let me know if you, I also have some general pass tickets if you want. Just, you know, email me, let me know. Mm-hmm. And I think I said something about, you know, following her program. And, you know, I hope she can come by. I look forward to talking to her.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, I didn't really ask her for anything other than her time if she had it.
Mm-hmm. Your work has a lot of depth and like a message behind it. And I wonder, and this is a conflict I have with my own self, like when you get to the point where maybe you're gonna be selling it and someone else is gonna be taking it on, like, do you ever feel any conflict about like where they're coming from, like what they see in it? Like, I've had people buy paintings that to me like had all this like gravitas, but then I didn't know if they were into what I was putting into it message-wise, or if they were just feeling like the aesthetic of it.
Most people who bought my work, they really want to know the content. They really want to know the conceptual idea. They're not asking me about colors or anything like that. I mean, they're sure they're looking at things like that from an aesthetic level, but most of my conversations with you know, the collectors I've had have always been around conceptual and content. And you know, they usually last a long time, you know. And it gets to the point for me that I, you know, almost forget, like, oh, you came here to buy something, or you may be considering buying something. So, because we're just having a conversation. And that's kind of the level I like to leave it, and sort of just enjoy the conversation. And, like, you know, money's great. Money's cool. It helps it helps me do more stuff, you know. But I think what the biggest payday is when people get it. And when, you know, because sometimes you're just in your studio and you're just making stuff and you're by yourself and you have a feeling that it's working. But when people start seeing the ideas that you have, and then they sort of take it on themselves. That's really fulfilling.
You did the residency at the DeYoung?
Yes.
And so the work in that show was predominantly this text-based work you've been doing lately?
Yes. Yeah, I was really fortunate, and I really felt honored to be a resident at the DeYoung. I had this idea back in 2008 when I started doing these days and occasion pieces. And for the listeners, let me describe what they are. So there are text-based pieces that are separated by increments of time. And this idea started when I'm really interested in just narratives in general in my work. And I was really interested in sustaining that narrative without always using an object or having a specific figure or body into it. And so the next evolution for me was to start looking at the physicality of language and looking at how we sort of overlook time. We sort of look at time as this linear piece. And the way I was looking at this particular narrative for this body of work, I wanted to look at language and time as something more simultaneous. So if you stand on any street corner, you know, downtown, or if you're riding Muni, like I do a lot, you'll hear multiple conversations at one point in time. And it's really interesting to me how these conversations intersect and sort of create this other entity, this other, you know, maybe this other dimension. And I think it gives us a little bit more intimate look about how we live as human beings, how we interact, and how things are just a little bit more simultaneous than we like to think of them as. So I started recording by writing down or just memory about things I would hear, conversations I would have with people, things that stood out, or just observations that I would have during my day, and putting them in between these blocks of time. So looking at what happens between the seconds and the minutes, and eventually I'll get up to what happens between the seconds and minutes and hours. So for example, one of the pieces that I have in my studio, I was writing the number 9 San Bruno. And if anybody who writes this number 9 San Bruno, it gets really exciting sometimes. And
it is.
Yes.
All things happen on that bus. Yeah. All things, all human events
transpire on the number 9 San Bruno. Yes. So I was actually sitting on the bus coming from the art supply store, and I used to have a studio that was on 15th Potrero, and so I was writing the number 9 actually to go work on this exact piece. And this guy gets on the bus and he starts screaming, "My girls run boys! That's right, damn it! My girls run boys!" And, you know, the etiquette when you're riding on a bus and somebody starts screaming is like, you just sort of don't make any eye contact. You don't try to engage. You just wait. And he sort of just rattle off for a couple. But to me, the observation was, you know, "My girls run boys," cried the man. We all sat quietly, waiting anxiously for his inner demons to transfer. Because that's basically what we're doing. Like, I hope I get off the bus first, or he gets off before me. So these types of observations, and again, when I'm working on these pieces, I'm not really looking to have a beginning, middle, end of this narrative. Conceptually, it's you can start reading anywhere. The only, you know, dimensions that I have are the physical, you know, limitations of whatever I'm writing on.
There's timestamps in there, and are those arbitrary, or are they kind of what you're thinking?
Yeah, I just start with 1 second, mm-hmm. and I'll just build off of that. I've been taking notes lately, and as I see things occur, I've been writing down that specific time. Mm-hmm. So maybe sometimes 3:45 will repeat itself twice. Mm-hmm. I guess I can start distinguishing between AM and PM. I don't know. And also just looking at how I'm going to format it from now on. I've gotten to the point where I'm starting to leave these big gaps of white space in some sections, and changing justification of laying out text, where sometimes it's justified to the left, sometimes to the right, sometimes to the middle. Mm-hmm. Again, making the text and the time the object, mm-hmm. making it the subject as well.
Mm-hmm. And these they're like charcoal stenciled, or
they're stenciled with graphite.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I mean your hand is so present, right? The graphite just like not smudged, but just. The mark is everywhere.
Yeah.
That's an interesting choice, I think, to have made.
Yeah, and I kind of like that. It sort of gives you this feeling of white noise in the background. Mm-hmm.
or just how many conversations are happening, and there's moments where it gets really dark and kind of concentrated, or you can hear it, you know, you can see those things happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Yeah, I had a studio mate to ask me once, like, oh, like, how are you gonna clean that up? I'm just sort of looked at her like,
I'm like, are you kidding me? If I were worried about that, it would have been happening already.
Exactly.
At this point.
Like, no, this is the finished piece. She's like, oh. So I think she had this. I think
that's cool. I mean, yeah. I think that's an interesting place, because I'm sure now she's probably also thinking about like what that means to have all the traces of these conversations or of your hand in there.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it also just lets me draw more, because with the stencil, you know, inside the stencil, I can only do so much. I can change like the weight of the of a letter or a sentence by using more or less graphite.
Yeah.
But you know, those you know, inexplicable smudges that happen, you know, as I'm moving on. I mean, because I don't think any smudge happens twice. I mean, even the piece I'm working on right now, I looked at it like, oh, my handprints are all in it. It's like, okay.
At the De Young, I was interested because you had visitors also drawing, right?
Yeah.
And that was an interesting choice. I mean, I don't know if is that required in that space? Or
yeah, there's an interactive component for the space. And, you know, talking to Kevin and talking to Renee, I was like, well, you know, can I have people write on the wall in the same way I do? And it was really interesting to see people walk in and, you know, we would tell them about the project, and the interns that were explaining the project to them, and people would be like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a trick, right? Like, you're going to try to write on the wall and like something bad's going to happen. Like, no, you can write on the wall. You know, here's the stencils. Here's how I do it. Or they would explain how I would do it if I was talking to somebody else, and people would be really into it. A couple of people came back twice.
So what were they writing, or what were they sort of directed, or were they, what was the direction given, I guess?
I didn't really give them any direction about what they should write. I was
Did everyone sign their name with their year?
No. One person used Roman numerals. Okay. I thought that was really interesting. And he actually had some stuff that he had written. He had a diary. And he started writing some stuff. The first thing I wrote up on the wall, I started it off. First thing I wrote on the wall was I was walking through the Hate, actually going to the De Young. And I had a little time to kill because I don't work that far from the De Young. So I can walk there. And there was these two guys behind me, and they were talking about some drama they were embroiled in, you know. And one of them said, yeah, I had to tell her. You know, I'm really not interested in living vicariously through your sex life. I almost fell over. I sort of just half turned over my shoulder, like, yeah, that's going up on the wall, dude. Thanks. And again, it's those things with, you know, these public things that people say that, you know, if they've raised their voices a couple octaves, it would definitely add to the overall conversation that somebody could actually bring home. A couple of my students, they came out, they brought some classes out, and I was explaining the process to some of the kids. And I think this young girl, she's like maybe third or fourth grade, and she sort of looks at me after explaining. She sort of looks at me, she sort of cocks her head at me and says, Mr. Ewing, does it mean you're eavesdropping?
Sure does.
And I said, well, it depends on the volume of your voice. I think, you know, in a public, you know, some things just become public information if you say them loud enough.
So the piece you're working on now is for a show at Yerba Buena.
Yeah.
And you're doing it, well, yeah, we'll start there. Multi-question situations.
Yes, it's for an exhibit at Yerba Buena is called Take This Hammer. So I belong to of a collective called 3.9 Collective. We're a collective of African-American artists and writers and curators who live and work in San Francisco. So talking to Christian, she wanted...
That's Christian Frock.
Yes, indeed. She and Rebecca Silberman were really interested in me creating a piece in the same vein that I did for the De Young, where I'm... This one's not going to have any increments of time in it, but just me stenciling out 3.9's vision statement.
I have a question about being in a collective. I always like to ask guests if they are in any kind of collaborative group or anything. How do you do that? Because Maysoon and I collaborate, and I'm always looking for new tips on how to spice up the relationship. Or unspice it sometimes.
Oh. Food. Always bring food.
Bland food.
Oh, always bring food.
Bring food to a meeting.
I think that will save lives.
Usually when we have a group meeting, we usually bring food. We've been, I think we've been really fortunate. I think people are starting to ask us to do things. And so we, you know, we do a couple projects every year. Next year, we're going to be, we're going to take a stab at curating a show at Root Division, tentatively called A Call for Beauty. So we're going to be looking at beauty from the African-American perspective and what it means to us. So we're really excited about that because we can now, we can expand outside of the collective and start asking other artists from across the Bay to come participate. So really excited about that and seeing what everybody comes up with.
Do you never fight?
We argue, yeah. We argue just like family do.
Right on. Do you have any tips for conflict resolution?
I think just talk. Just talk everything out. And just because I think with any kind of argument, people's feelings are usually hurt. And I think once you let them know that, oh, I understand where you're coming from. I didn't understand that, or I didn't see that, or... yeah, I understand where you're coming from, but, you know, here's my position, and it wasn't meant to, like, to, you know, try to screw you over or anything like that, or ignore you or anything like that. I think people sort of like, oh, okay, you know, and I think they sort of see the bigger picture, like, oh, let's come back to the collective and let's do some work.
The 3.9 Collective, can you talk about where that sprouted from?
Sure. We started back in 2011 we started. And it was just, I think it was just five of us. So it was, I got a call from a friend of mine, Ron Saunders. He's a local Bay Area photographer and artist. We had worked on another project together out in the Bayview. So we had kept in touch. And so he asked me to come to this meeting. And at this meeting was Ron Saunders, myself, Saran Norris, Nancy Cato, and William Rhodes. And Ron had this magazine article. I guess we did just finish the latest census of San Francisco, and in this newspaper article, I think it's from the Bayview Reporter, it said, or it predicted, by the time of the next census, with the current decline in African American population in San Francisco, by the next census we'll be down to 3.9%, and I think currently we're at 5. So we started.
And that's like 50% of what it was, what, like 5 years ago?
Probably. And so we started looking at what does that mean for us as artists? Not only just where we're going to show our work, how does it look? How does it look on the artistic landscape of San Francisco when you're not getting that really diverse view, especially in a city that says it's, you know, really prides itself, really champions itself on being, having this diverse population here, when it's really not. It really doesn't have this diverse population here. And so who's making the art? Who's curating the art? Where's our voice going to come from? Who's going to be looking at it, and who's going to seek it out? So we got together, and I think one of the first things we did is we had a small group show, and there was only five of us, and then we started recruiting other people and asking other people, and we started meeting other artists who, and curators and writers who lived in, you know, in the San Francisco area. And now we're up to, I just sent an email out a couple of days ago, so I think we're up to about 18 people.
Awesome.
And again, we're not all visual artists. Again, some of us are curators, some of us are writers, or both. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, since 2011, we've been doing different projects, you know, a couple different projects every year. You know, we did Art Pad 1 year, which was really interesting. People would walk into our room and look around and they'd be like, so this is really great. So where's your guys' gallery at? Like, no, we don't have a brick and mortar. We're just a collective. We're a collective of artists. The other thing was interesting, as we were setting up, we were sitting in there in a room laughing and cracking up and listening to music. And people who were also setting up would sort of look in the door like, how come they're not screaming at each other? How come they're yelling? There's a look of surprise, like, you know, hi, like, you guys are having a good time. Why is that happening? Like, I don't know. Because for that particular event, we had people in the group who did a really good job of, you know, organizing their piece for the whole. So somebody did all the paperwork to send in for ArtPad. You know, somebody collected all the money. Somebody got the check to, you know, to go with all the paperwork. Somebody made a scale model of the room, and we had a couple of people who curated like how things are going to be laid out. And then we had people who came, who showed up that day, and their only job was to lay out the room and hang the work. You know, yeah.
Wonders.
Teamwork.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Take This Hammer is another piece we're doing. And again, the the group show at Root Division. So yeah, it's really nice working in a collective. I really enjoy working with these people.
Do you consider, this might be weird sounding, do you consider yourself an activist?
It's not a weird question. It's just not the first thing that comes to my head.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the work I'm doing, you know, with fact and fiction, I think fact and fiction and Days and Occasion are vastly different. I mean, I'm really, in fact and fiction, I'm really dealing with some, the power of the story, some negligent aspects of history and popular media. And with Days and Occasion, it's a lot freer because it's almost everything that pops into my head. I'm really not trying to make any clear statement with the text I'm using other than that these things occur all at once. But I think when it comes to a lot more of my other, you know, for lack of a better word, political work or activist work, it's kind of how I filter things. It's kind of how I, you know, through art, I sort of filter things that way and I ask questions that way.
I had a question. The project you did, public safety, mm-hmm. with the targets. Mm-hmm. I think I read or listened to an interview or a talk that you were giving talking about being in the military. Were you in the military?
Yes, I was.
What branch?
I was in the Army National Guard for 6 years.
Were you doing art also at that same time?
Yeah, I was in, I got in when I was doing my undergrad at LSU. And then when I went to West Virginia to do my my graduate work, I was still in the National Guard. Not to sound like a advertisement for the Army National Guard, it's 1 weekend a month, two weeks during the summer, and in particular grad school, I had two other friends who were also in the art department, and so it just seemed normal. I grew up in a military family, so it didn't seem like any kind of interference.
Then can you identify poisonous snakes?
Some of them, yeah.
Because of your military training?
No, I lived in New Mexico when I was a kid.
Okay, so. Sure enough.
Safety, survival tips from, you know, the neighborhood.
Just wondering.
And sometimes, you know, if it's weird looking, you know, it might be okay just to go ahead and, like, throw a knife through it.
Right on.
The first time, I was telling a friend the story. She's writing she's trying to write a play about Kuwait, and I was telling her about being in Saudi Arabia and standing inside of a tent, and we were a couple of months coming back to the States, and we had wooden floors inside the tent, and I was talking with three friends. We heard this scurrying across the floor. We're like, what the heck was that? And so we're looking around, and we see this thing, and then you've seen Aliens, right? So that's what a camel spider looks like. It looked like the facehugger from Aliens. So I threw a knife in it. Kill it. I don't know what it is, but it's, you know, it can't live here. So yeah.
One of my questions is a very whimsical, silly, not simple question.
I love a silly question.
I was curious to know what you listen to in the studio.
Oh, we've never asked anyone that.
I thought we should ask.
Well, it's not so much what I listen to as what I watch.
Oh, yeah. Okay, whatever.
So I have a thing about watching movies that I've already seen and have them listening and have them playing in the background.
I hear you.
So right now I'm Anonymous.
I don't even know this.
Tell us about Anonymous.
Anonymous is, I guess they're following through with the theory that William Shakespeare really didn't write he didn't write any of those plays. And so there was another person writing who wasn't sort of allowed to do this. So it's the whole political and background what's going on there. So so whatever comes to mind, I've got a locker over here that's filled with like used movies that I've gotten. And my only rule is it has to be stuff that I've already seen. Because
yeah.
That way I really don't have to pay attention to it. And that and no Mel Brooks. Can't do Mel Brooks.
No?
Because you'll laugh too much.
Laughing too damn hard.
Oh, it's so good.
Can't do Blazing Saddles.
Focused work with your hands. I could see that being a problem. You're like, what?
Young Frankenstein's definitely out of the question.
So good.
Can't do it. I mean, when he goes into the whole, putting on a rug, I'll just, see, I'm about to lose it right now.
My when I was in college working on my thesis, I watched the first half of The Sound of Music
every night after my one out, after I came home from the library at 1 a.m. Literally probably at least 30 minutes every night for like a semester.
Okay, I have a question.
Why?
Yeah. Why the first half only? There's so many questions.
Well, the first half was peppy.
Before the Nazis come and ruin everything.
It's pre-Nazi. I mean, you're like a 20-something-year-old working on a thesis staying up until 1 and 3 in the morning. I couldn't deal with Nazis at that time. It wasn't happening. I just needed some like really easy, fun songs to sing along to.
Fascinating.
I know all of them. We can sing them together. No.
Is there a movie that you've watched the most times? And how many times would you say you've watched said movie?
Snatch by Guy Ritchie.
Periwinkle Blue.
Periwinkle Blue from my mom. Look at him. He's a big fucker. He's a boxer. Look at him. Look at the size of him. Yeah, to the point where like I have two friends that I work with, and like we can quote the stuff to each other. Like we can act out large parts of Snatch.
All right. Well, thank you so much for speaking with us today and your incredible patience with me learning how to make a podcast. And as always, congratulations.
Thank you, guys. Anytime.
I saw my image of you in exponential waves of gray.
Okay, let me rub my knees.
How are the knees feeling? Dear listener, we'd like you to take a moment to rub your knees.
Yeah.
Rub them in opposite directions for 3, 2, 1, and now rotate to what change directions in 3, 2, 1. How does that make you feel? Are you feeling more relaxed?
How did that make you feel?
It made me feel great.
I love it. It feels good on my hands and on my knees.
Yeah.
I'm wearing jeans right now.
I'm not.
What are you wearing?
I'm wearing some kind of material. They're little pants.
What is that material?
I don't know.
Just cloth?
Some stretch,
some cottony,
some stuff.
Something.
And I also wanted to rub like forward and back on my thigh right by the knee.
That's too sexual.
No!
If it didn't improve your mental health, or if it did, or if you have any comments or suggestions for future somatic exercises we should be doing, please give us a call, 419-351-6606. You can tweet us at Pine Tree Podcast, or you can email us congratulationspinetree@gmail.com. Or you can leave a comment, except Maysoon hates that, at congratulationspinetree.com. Also, we're still, if anybody wants to put proposals in for some kind of audio thing, What's the, you know those signs that like we pay for ugly houses?
Yes.
We buy ugly houses?
We buy audio.
We buy ugly audio.
We buy your audio. Send it on over.
Yeah, well, first send us an email and see if we want it or not.
We have recording equipment you can use, so we want to hook up with you.
Yeah, and we have equipment you can use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us what you're thinking. We're excited.
And from the bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between. This is and was Congratulations, Pine Tree.